This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're ending the year with entertaining interviews from 2008. In April, I spoke with the band REM. Let's start with a track from their debut album, Murmur. Beside yourself, little Brady is gonna stay. That's Radio Free Europe from REM's debut album, Murmur. The song was originally released as a single in 1981 and got a lot of play on college radio. Murmur was released in 1983. Rolling Stone named it the best album of the year, over records by Michael Jackson and The Police. A special 25th anniversary remastered edition of Murmur was released earlier this year. REM has endured for three decades, continuing to be known for maneuvering their way through the recording industry while holding on to their integrity. Last year, the band was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. When I spoke to lead singer Michael Stipe, guitarist Peter Buck, and bass player Mike Mills, they had just released Accelerate, REM's first CD in 4 years. Here's a track from it called Man-Sized Wreath. Michael Stipe, Peter Buck, Mike Mills, welcome to Fresh Air. It's really great to have you here.
Thank you.
Now, the new CD has 11 songs, and it's about 34, 35 minutes long, which is really short for a CD. Why did you want to keep it that short?
Well, you know, when it was vinyl that was the medium, the physical content size of the piece of plastic meant that you had to clock in at 40 minutes or less, or you would overload the grooves and you would lose any sort of sonic quality. And then when they came out with CDs, people went, oh my God, I can put an hour and 20 minutes of music on this thing. And unfortunately, a lot of people did, including us. So we just realized that it was, you know, it might be a good idea at this point in our career to just to rein it in a little bit and see. It's a lot of fun to say what you have to say in a really short amount of time. And if you can do that, and if you can really get a message across and pack it with a pretty powerful punch in less than 3 minutes or less than 3.5 minutes, then it's quite an accomplishment.
So it was a good songwriting exercise for you.
Yes, yes.
Well, let me play a song from the new CD that I think is a new song that's exciting. And it's called Houston, and it's sung from the point of view of someone after Hurricane Katrina. And, Mike, I want to ask you about the organ or synthesizer that you're playing on this. It's so dark and so ominous. I really like the sound of it. I have no idea what you're doing.
Well, that makes two of us. It's actually what happened was I wandered into the studio and Peter and Scott McCoy were playing that song on guitars, and I didn't know it. I'd never heard it before. So I just sat down and started playing what came to mind, and that's pretty much what's on the record. I didn't know what Michael was going to write about lyrically, but I felt the darkness of the song, and I wanted a really angry keyboard sound. I didn't know why, but I did. And then so it's basically just a nasty farfisa run through a big old rat pedal, and then on top of that, we've got some more of the darkness and anger of that song. It exists in the bass. The idea of Scott McCoy came up with the idea. It's a bass through a really nasty fuzz pedal, doubled with a bowed upright bass also threw some nasty fuzz. And we just knew it was a big, ugly, kind of scary sound. And then after Michael put the lyrics on it, we realized, oh my God, it sounds like a hurricane going by, which we're never quite that literal, with the music and the lyrics combining, but it happened that way, and it's just an excellent combination.
I think it's one of those cases where the original music inspired me to write that lyric, and then you guys having heard that lyric, you took that original music and made it
even more so.
Mm-hmm. And it is a very ominous musical landscape.
Peter, do you want to say anything about it before we hear it?
Well, yeah, Michael said he wanted songs that were a minute and a half long, so when I wrote it, I had a clock, and I just looked at the minute hand, and after a minute and a half, I was done. We just put as much stuff on there as we could. So it's not always about the forethought, sometimes it just occurs, and as it just got uglier and weirder, I have noticed that the more cinematic something is when you give it to Michael, the more it'll catch his ear.
Why don't we hear Houston? This is from REM's new album, Accelerate. That's Houston from REM's new CD, Accelerate, and my guests are Michael Stipe, the vocalist, Peter Buck, guitarist, Mike Mills, who plays bass and keyboards. Let's go back to when you all met in Athens, Georgia, and this would be about what year?
About 1979.
Okay. Can you each describe something about how you knew you could play with the others, that this would work, that you were compatible musically?
Well, when we first got together in the old abandoned church, I remember it was freezing. That's all I remember. It was really, really cold. Bill Berry and I had played together in bands in Macon, Georgia, and we had a couple of songs that we'd written back then, and we showed them to Peter and Michael, and I remember just loving what they both did with the songs. Peter played guitar in a way that I'd never really heard anyone play before, and even then Michael had a really great grasp on how to sing, and it was very different from how I would have done it, which is what I was looking for. So I just remember thinking, I can do stuff with these guys.
What was different about Peter's guitar playing than what you'd heard before?
Peter...
More inept.
The finest ineptitude ever heard by man. Peter plays with an arpeggiated style. He has, I love saying this phrase, he has the best right hand in the business. But instead of just thrashing away and strumming chords, which, what everyone does, and it all tends to sound the same, you can really create melody after melody after melody by arpeggiating with the right hand, which is what Peter does, and it just opens up all this space for me to noodle around on the bass and it just hadn't—I hadn't really heard it that much at that point.
Peter, how did you start playing that way?
I remember really liking the Birds, the band, the Birds, when I was learning to play guitar, and I was so ignorant about music that, not realizing that Roger was finger picking and using four fingers, I just worked really hard to imitate him using a flat pick. And by the time I actually figured out that he was doing this kind of folk finger picking thing, I was kind of flat picking in a way that was a little different, and kind of, I don't know, it wasn't my own style necessarily, but it was at least a start.
And Peter, what made you realize that you wanted to play with the other members of REM who weren't yet REM?
it really was just the first rehearsal. I mean, within a day or two, we had 8 or 10 kind of original songs. I mean, as original as we were writing at that time anyway. And they sounded good, you know. We got better as songwriters, but it seemed to fit together really well immediately, which, you know, is from what I've heard later from other people, doesn't usually happen.
And Michael?
I felt like we had to write 20 or 25 songs before we really knew what we were doing, because none of us were that proficient on our instruments. Mike and Bill probably more so than Peter and I. When I started the band, it didn't occur to me that I would have to write lyrics. I kind of had this kind of teenage fantasy idea of what it was to be in a band and to be able to tour and what have you. And it didn't include the actual work. So it took me a while to come around to that.
The impression I got from the first time we spoke in the 90s is that when you started singing, you were just a little shy about it.
I was a little shy about everything. I think I was pathologically so.
My guests are Michael Stipe, Peter Buck, and Mike Mills from the band REM. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking with singer Michael Stipe, guitarist Peter Buck, and bass player Mike Mills of the band REM. This year, they released a new CD called Accelerate and a 25th anniversary edition of their first album, Murmur. Michael, you had said that in 1985, you felt that you started to come into your own and get more comfortable, you know, as a songwriter and performer. 2 years later, in 87, REM had its first real hit, The One I Love. And I'm wondering if you knew when you recorded this that this was somehow going to be different, if it felt musically like something happened that hadn't happened before.
I always said, and I think I probably stole this from Peter or Mike, I always said that I wouldn't know a hit single if it was sitting in my lap. And I feel like perhaps the producer that we were working with on that record had an idea that that song could make it onto the radio, or that our time had come to be a top 40 radio band. But I certainly didn't recognize that.
It was my, I think, eighth favorite song on that record.
Really?
So it wasn't, you know, it was like, oh, yeah, we put it on side two. It was kind of, but, you know, that's fine. I mean, it wasn't, we didn't write it for any particular reason other than that we just wrote it and it popped up and then it was kind of a hit. And, you know, I mean, hit singles are kind of meaningless in their way. I mean, it's just a song that you wrote that day.
I remember talking to, when we were making Document, there was something on Document that I really thought was a really great song. It might have been End of the World, I'm not even sure. Thinking, you know, okay, we've had a hit. Maybe this is another one. I remember asking Scott Litt, you know, when people are making these things, I was like, for example, when Petula Clark and her producers were making Downtown, did they know what they were doing? Did they know what a great song they had? He goes, yep. So, you know, sometimes people know and sometimes you don't.
One thing that sounds different to me in this era of the band is I think, Michael, your voice is more out front as opposed to more in the mix. And I guess I'm wondering how everybody felt about that.
Well, you know, that was fine. When we did the first record, I had a kind of picture in my head that, you know, it would be, wow, this weird kind of, you know, like some record from the 60s that you just can't figure out what the context was. It's just kind of this beautiful artifact. And, you know, we weren't really guaranteed that we were going to get to do 5 records or 14 or whatever. I mean, I was kind of thinking, well, we'll get this record and maybe if we're really lucky, we'll get another one. And you know, Murmur, that first record, that was kind of what I thought it should be. It's kind of like a radio beacon from some other planet, you know. I mean, certainly if we thought, you know, radio airplay was important, Murmur wouldn't sound like it does. But I think if we had thought radio airplay was important, we would have made a not very good record.
Well, why don't we hear The One I Love from 1987, since we had been talking about that. And this is REM, and my guests are Michael Stipe, Peter Buck, and Mike Mills.
This one goes out to the one I love. This one goes out to the simple prop to occupy my time. This one goes out to the one I love. Fire! Fire! This one goes out to the one I love.
That's REM from 1987, and my guests are Michael Stipe, Peter Buck and Mike Mills of REM. They have a new CD, which is called Accelerate. That song led to a recording contract with Warner Brothers. How did it change your lives on the road to have like a major label behind you and the money for a tour? How did it change like how you got around, where you stayed, what your day to day life was like?
It was exactly the same.
Really that different?
Yeah,
it was,
really?
You know, I mean, you know, we just went out and played some more.
We broke even or made money on every single tour we ever did from the very beginning,
which is rare.
Which is rare, but I mean, you see all these people screaming that they can't tour without corporate support and record company support. That's just not true. We broke even or made money every single time without any help from the record label. It was all, you know, we lived within our means and took the door from the places we played, and we lived in you know, one hotel room or one van or whatever it took. We didn't want to be in debt to anyone. We didn't want anyone to have any control over what we did, so we did whatever was necessary to maintain our freedom, and it worked out really well.
I want to jump ahead to 1991, to your recording Losing My Religion, and I think it's a perfect record. I mean, it's a great song, great singing, and I love the mandolin on it, and the strings. Peter, let's start with the mandolin. Like, what made you think of a mandolin for this?
You know, I think I was on the 89 tour, and I just bought a mandolin. I mean, it was just that simple. I had a day off in New York and found this kind of strange... you know, I'm not sure what, it wasn't an American mandolin, it was like Greek or something, and it just, I mean, it was just something to do on the bus, you know, plunk around at the thing. And so I kind of wrote it on mandolin. I didn't have any great foresight, and I never really played mandolin that much. I mean, I think if you added up the amount of time I played mandolin in my life, it might be 50 hours, and 49 hours that would be playing Losing My Religion on stage. So it's not as if I've, you know, I didn't become an expert at it. It just became just one of those things I started using. And I guess I was hanging around with a bunch of folk musicians, and that kind of just entered my life a little bit.
And Michael, the phrase Losing My Religion, is that what came first to you lyrically? And how did it come to you as the title phrase of the song?
I don't remember writing the song at all. I remember singing it in the studio, but I don't remember writing it. But the phrase comes from, I actually changed it. The phrase is lost my religion. And it's a Southern phrase that indicates something that has pushed you so far that you question your faith.
It's kind of like the 20s version of blowing my mind.
Okay, so I'm going to play it. This is REM, Losing My Religion. That's REM, and my guests from REM are Michael Stipe, Peter Buck, and Mike Mills, and they have a new CD, which is called Accelerate. There was a period, skipping ahead just a few more years, in 1995 when nearly everyone in the band was sick. The drummer, then Bill Berry, collapsed on stage with a brain aneurysm. Peter, you had surgery for, I think, an intestinal adhesion.
That was Mike.
No, that was Mike.
I've never been
sick.
Yeah.
I'm still healthy.
Good.
Peter was looking,
good,
Peter,
good.
Peter
keep
was
it that
looking
way.
Both ways before he crossed the road.
Yeah, I was definitely just going, well, you know.
and Michael, you had emergency surgery for a hernia. A couple of years after that, Bill left the band. And from what I've read, he said that he wasn't going to leave if it meant the band would split up, and you decided to all stay together. Was that the only time you've come close to breaking up?
Now, you know, I think being in a band is an ongoing process, and I think that everyone at one point or another thinks, you know, I could just walk away from it. And it's kind of nice knowing that you can walk away from it. I can't imagine how resentful it would be if you just felt like, okay, I can never leave this band.
Yeah.
But the freedom to walk away means that you don't have to. You know, you're totally, we're totally able to work and take some time off. You know, and it's still an option to walk away from it. But it isn't something that I want to do.
We've always given each other the freedom to do whatever we want outside the band, which is, you know, not a difficult thing to grant, and it's also helpful. I mean, you go out and you play with other people, you bring back certain inspirations and ideas that you might not have had within your little four walls, and it can be well to your advantage to do that.
We'll talk more with the band REM after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking with singer Michael Stipe, guitarist Peter Buck, and bass player Mike Mills of the band REM. This year, they released a new CD called Accelerate and a 25th anniversary edition of their first album, Murmur.
I'd like to ask you each about your music background, which some of which is like not the image of like the indie band performer. Like Mike, you were in marching band, which must have really been fun. I love marches.
It was great fun. I carried a sousaphone around for a year or two, and then we switched it over to electric bass for the high school football games, and I had somebody tote my bass out onto the field, and I stood there in a leisure suit and played electric bass while
I wish I'd seen the band.
You can see my high school yearbook sometime. It's got me in there.
And Peter, I read that your first live concert was seeing Jesus Christ Superstar in 1970. Is that right?
Yeah, with my mom. And the guy next to me handed me a joint. I was 12.
Did you take a toke?
You know, I just looked at it, and I looked at my mom, and I just kind of looked straight ahead. it wasn't really my thing. Actually, the first actual live performance I ever saw of music was when I was in second grade, and we lived in Richmond, California, which is near San Francisco, and it was like 1964 or 5, and this band came in, and I remember they did Turn, 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 and Help by the Beatles. They had a 12-string guitar. They came to our school and played at lunch hour. I have no idea why. And I just remember thinking, that's cool, and all the little girls got, you know, their arms autographed and stuff. It was all over for me then.
Michael, do you remember your first concert or your first, like this is really great music experience?
Well, my first great music experience, I think, is probably discovering punk rock when I was 15. And I went and bought the Patti Smith album, Horses, the day that it was released.
Were you
decided then and there that that's what I was going to do with my life, was sing in a band.
When you'd go to a club and hear punk rock, were you like a quiet, restrained listener, or did you, you know, like jump up and down and do the whole thing?
I jumped up and down and did the whole thing, but I also, my kind of like incredible geek moment, or one of them, is that I was supposed to be 21 years old, so I had a fake ID that said I was 24. I had really curly hair at the time and chest hair, which was really rare for a 16, 17-year-old. So I would wear my shirt unbuttoned down to my belly button to show the chest hair, because I thought that made me look older. And I would pick my hair out so that it looked like an afro, and I'd wear platform shoes. So I was at the punk rock show in platform shoes with a big afro and my shirt. It was a little bit of a mixed message going on there.
Wow.
But I did see some, I saw some pretty good, well, I got in the club. I mean, that's the good news.
Right.
I did see some pretty amazing bands, and I took pictures of most of them with my camera, with my father's camera, actually, that I would always carry with me back then.
Okay. Wow. Well, it's been great to talk with you all. Thank you so much.
Terry, yes, thanks. Indeed. Thanks so much.
The fury's breathing down your neck.
That's It's the End of the World as We Know It from R.E.M.'s 1987 album Document. Our interview with Michael Stipe, Peter Buck, and Mike Mills was recorded in April.